Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, September 21st, 2023. President Salva Kiir pleads with members of the international community not to forget the people of South Sudan.
We call upon the United Nations to lift the arms embargo imposed on us to aid peace implementation and to secure the elections.
And a group calling itself the National Consensus says the United Nations should stop inviting President Kiir to address world leaders.
Kiir does not represent the people of South Sudan. Kiir has been a cause of our wars in South Sudan, a state-sponsored militias. And he has been lacking completely the political will.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir Mayardit addressed the 78th session of the United Nations General Assembly this past hour. In his speech, Mr. Kiir emphasized his government's commitment to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and highlighted his country's progress made in education.
In February this year, I directed the Ministry of Education to implement free primary and secondary education policy across the country. This policy has directly led to enrollment of 2.3 million children in our schools. To ensure that girls stay in schools, we have banned child marriages.
In the context of the 78th Assembly's focus on climate change, President Kiir stated that his administration is actively addressing and mitigating the adverse consequences of climate change.
On climate change, South Sudan is dedicated to addressing its adverse impact. We plan to prioritize sustainable and use sustainable land use, promote renewable energy, and collaborate with international partners, reduce carbon emissions, and protect our environment for generations to come.
The South Sudan's leader acknowledged the challenges faced by his country since independence in 2021, including conflicts in 2013 and 2016 and the resulting humanitarian needs. But he argued that South Sudan embarked on a new chapter in 2018.
We acknowledge the political, humanitarian and security challenges we have faced as a country since 2013. However, we have turned the corner with the signing of the Revitalized Peace Agreement in 2018. Now we are determined to build on the commitments of our revised National Development Strategy 2021-2024 to consolidate peace and stabilize the economy.
President Kiir repeated his commitment to expedite the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement, complete the transitional period by 2024, and lead the nation to its first election. He also called on the United Nations Security Council to lift the arms embargo imposed on South Sudan in 2018, emphasizing its importance for peace.
We call upon the United Nations to lift the arms embargo imposed on us to aid peace implementation and to secure the elections. The arms embargo has impeded the implementation of security arrangements because effective deployment of the unified forces, which we have graduated, cannot happen without arms.
Mr. Kiir acknowledged the refugee crisis in his country worsened by the recent conflict in Sudan, which has led to an influx of refugees and returnees into South Sudan, straining local border communities. He appealed to the international community for resources to help address the challenges posed by people fleeing the conflict in Sudan. A group of South Sudanese opposition leaders and activists who call themselves the National Consensus Forum released a statement ahead of President Kiir's speech, saying he does not represent, quote, the sovereignty of the people of South Sudan and should not be recognized by the United Nations. My colleague Nabil Biagio spoke with Susan Jumbo, a representative of the group.
Kiir does not represent the people of South Sudan. Kiir has been a cause of our wars in South Sudan, a state-sponsored militias, and he has been lacking completely the political will to implement peace accords that have been signed and facilitated by IGAD regional bodies, as well as the world community. So, and our population is at least 7.8 million facing hunger at the moment, and several millions and regional African nations as refugees, and almost close to 2 million living internally displaced. So as somebody who does not take care of the welfare of our people does not represent us.
A simple response to that would be, if I were to play devil's advocate here, the United Nations recognizes President Salva Kiir as head of state and extended an invitation to him. If you say he does not represent the sovereign will of the people of South Sudan, like you say in this statement you released yesterday, who does? Who represents the people of South Sudan?
We are held hostage by President Salva Kiir. So is the United Nations and the world community. Everybody seems to think there is no way out without Salva Kiir being in power. While we, the people of South Sudan, are oppressed and maimed and unable to speak at free will, to get to choose our own leader, the one that we desire, the one that we know who could rule South Sudan and lead South Sudan properly. So basically, it's a hostage situation that, as far as we're concerned, and we are saying to the world community, it is time to wake up and see that, much as the United Nations in 2011 welcomed the 193rd nation on earth, which is the youngest nation, South Sudan, and put it under the leadership of Salva Kiir. And since then, he hasn't been to any General Assembly, any United Nations General Assembly meetings. So he has put us in this situation where we are at now, where there is constant war. We are not in any peace at all whatsoever. So it is time for the United Nations as well to say, to do something about it.
What do you want world leaders gathered at the United Nations right now to do about this situation, these challenges that you have enumerated that are going on in South Sudan and the presidency of President Salva Kiir?
Well, it's very clear is that they should see Salva Kiir for the person that he is. They should not overlook facts that are reported by United Nations themselves. The United Nations, year in, year out, has reports that tell about how Kiir mismanages the country. So they have their facts. Let them not see him for what he's about to say, because all the lies he will be speaking in his speech will be totally different from the reality on the ground in South Sudan.
President Salva Kiir and other officials in his administration have been on the record consistently saying they will hold elections in 2024. Today, in his speech that's about to be given maybe in an hour or so, he's going to focus on the implementation of the peace agreement, what his government has achieved. And meanwhile, I read your press statement under the National Consensus Forum, and I look at the signatories. These are people you and your associates are all based in the diaspora, in the U.S. and other countries. How do you make your statement or your word carry weight when you're not on the ground, when Kiir is arguing at the General Assembly that he's implementing the peace and leading the nation to elections very soon, next year?
Well, as it is, Kiir has failed the country, as I said already. Almost the entire population is in dire condition. So there's total failure. The economy is failing. Corruption is endemic. So how can, and he lacks the political will to implement the peace agreement fully. So how can somebody like that be allowed to go for election?
That's Susan Jumbo, a member of South Sudanese group calling themselves National Consensus Forum. She was speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the U.S. state of Texas. Still on South Sudan, South Sudan's foreign minister James Morgan says the country will go for elections despite the enormous challenges facing South Sudan. Lawmakers from other signatories of the 2018 peace deal and activists say the country is not ready for elections. But Morgan insists President Kiir will no longer afford to extend the transitional government of national unity.
We cannot all the time postpone elections because A and B has not been done. If we were to wait for A and B in the governments that come as a result of the agreements, I tell you, John, we would have not yet even voted for the referendum. You know that the articles of the CPA up to today are not complete. The issue of Abyei is still outstanding. Southern Kordofan, Blue Nile, these were all the articles in the CPA. They are not completed. But where are we today? We have come out of Sudan because that was the main aim. Elections are determined not by the number of the people in the country. They are not determined by the population of the country, but the elections are determined by those who register only. And also leave alone the registration. Some might register and will not vote. Elections are determined by the number of those who voted at the end. So those who want to go for elections, let them go for elections. Those who feel that they don't like to go for elections, let them leave it.
We're saying that census should not be tied to the elections, but don't you want to know the population of the country so that when you, let's say, if you have 20,000 people in Kajukeji, and then the results from Kajukeji show up that 40,000 people voted, shouldn't that bring dispute?
Exactly. What this is what I'm saying. The results, the elections are determined by those who are registered. 20,000 people in Kajukeji or in Tombora, for that matter, are not the determinant factor of the outcome of the result of the elections. We are determining the outcome by those who have registered and those who have voted. There's a column for registered and there's a column for voted. So if a result come out that, okay, from 20,000, 40,000 people voted in this area, that is where, of course, it gives you now the right question to be asked. 20 people registered, maybe 15 people voted. How now comes that 40 people were there, 40,000 people were there? This is where we can see the mistake right away, and that constituency can be nullified. That is what it is exactly. It is not the population that determines the outcome of the elections.
You might disagree with me, but most countries that go for election, they first know their population, and then from there, they can now start registering people, regardless of how many people register to vote, but you have a figure to work with.
Census is a tool for development. It is not a tool for elections. It is a census to know how many people live in this area, and then we can do what projects can be done to them. I gave you an example of the first elections in India in 1951, where the results came out after 1 year because there were no roads. Census were not conducted, but they just conducted the elections. And it is not bad to start things. You know, John, people should not... if all things had gone well in South Sudan, this election should be our election number 3. The first election, we were supposed to have them in 2015. 5 years from 2015, 2020 would have gone for elections. Now we would be now talking the elections of maybe 2025. if things had gone right from the beginning. But you know that when the crisis happened in 2013, we didn't go for elections, regardless of when even the situation was not so bad. Some people had used this kind of complaints. During the One Sudan time, some of the constituencies, most of the constituencies in South, did not, in South Sudan, in Southern Sudan by then, they did not even participate in elections, but elections were being conducted in Sudan throughout. So let our people hold their hearts and let us start the democracy. If we get mistakes, we will learn from those mistakes. And then the next elections after this one will be better.
That's James Morgan Petia, South Sudan's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from New York on Tuesday this week. Still on issues to do with elections, the Outlawed People's Coalition for Civil Action, or PCCA, has rejected a section in the Election Act of 2012, which empowers the president of South Sudan to appoint 5% of lawmakers into the national parliament. PCCA describes the newly approved Electoral Act as unconstitutional and undemocratic. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng has more from Bor.
Earlier this week, the National Legislative Assembly approved the National Elections Act 2012, which gives President Kiir excessive powers to appoint 5% of the members of the country's national legislators after an election. Lawmakers from the SPLM loyal to President Kiir, South Sudan Opposition Alliance, and other political parties approved the controversial bill. Despite protest from lawmakers from the main opposition, the Sudan's People's Liberation Movement in Opposition, or SPLM-IO, loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar. Rajab Mohandis, a member of the PCCA, says he was surprised by the decision by the National Legislative Assembly to approve the National Elections Act, giving President Kiir the power to appoint 5% of the country's legislators.
Our first democratic elections in the independent South Sudan is supposed to grant our citizens the opportunity to choose who would represent them, so that there would be a connection between the representatives, the elected representatives, and the constituencies from which they are elected, that they would go to the assemblies and represent the views of the people who elected them. And that would also present an opportunity for accountability by the citizens on those they elect.
Quel Agur Quel, the former governor of Northern Bahr El Ghazali state, who is also a member of the PCCA, urged President Salva Kiir not to sign the bill into law and instead return it to the parliament for further deliberation.
That part of appointment is invalid and should not be exercised by the president, because the president has taken oath to protect the constitution. This is really an attack on democracy, and it is actually a joke on it. Therefore, it should be excluded from this, and president should send it back for that to be scrubbed out, because it doesn't fulfill the Article 2 of the Permanent Constitution of South Sudan.
John Agang, the chairperson of the Information Committee in the National Legislative Assembly, insists that the elections bill will not return to Parliament for further debate.
The bill has been already passed by the House, and it is now making its way to the presidency for their session. And if the president has the observation on the bill, then he will note down the observation, and then he send the bill back to the House. That is the only and only condition that the bill may come back to the House. So for that matter, let me just squarely say that the bill will never ever come back unless it has to come back from the presidency with observation.
The 2018 revitalized peace agreement stipulates the drafting of a permanent constitution, formation of a national unified army, and transitional justice, and the return of refugees should all be completed before elections are held. Several of those tasks have yet to be carried out. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Stay tuned for more updates from the UN General Assembly. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. During Wednesday's meeting of the United Nations Security Council, Russia's war in Ukraine took precedency in the speeches of world leaders who have been pulled into a conflict of different capacities. VOA's Veronica Baldras Iglesias took note of what was said and filed this report from New York.
Despite Russia voicing its strong opposition and in compliance with the organization's rules, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was the first leader to address the United Nations Security Council's meeting Wednesday. He didn't just condemn Moscow's invasion of his country, but also the Council's veto system that, in his view, enables it, and called for reforms.
If it is impossible to stop the war because all efforts are vetoed by the aggressor or those who condone the aggressor, there is a need for a system to prevent aggression through early response to actions violating territorial integrity and sovereignty of states.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov defended his country's military operations and turned the criticism on those supporting Ukraine.
The collective West, led by the United States, arbitrarily assumed the rank of arbiter of the destinies of all mankind and, overwhelmed by a complex of exclusivity, began to increasingly ignore the legacy of the founding fathers.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken decried Russia's belligerence as a clear violation of the U.N. Charter.
Some argue that continuing to stand with Ukraine and holding Russia accountable distracts us from addressing other priorities, like confronting the climate crisis, expanding economic opportunity, strengthening health systems. That is a false choice. We can and we must do both. We are doing both.
China opted to highlight its mediation efforts.
The core message is facilitating talks for peace.
After underlining his organization's commitment to the sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity of Ukraine, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for restraint.
This war is already causing limitless suffering. Its continuation risks further perilous escalation. There is never an alternative to dialogue, diplomacy, and a just peace.
Guterres added the United Nations will continue working toward a peaceful resolution to the conflict in line with the UN Charter, international law, and the resolutions of the General Assembly. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, the United Nations.
From the United Nations, we go to the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, where authorities say civilians in Fashala County face various challenges following days of deadly clashes between armed young men and the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. The Fashala County authorities say civilians who fled their homes are still hiding in the bushes. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
The acting commissioner of Poshala, Owiti Olung, says fighting has stopped in the area, but several women and children displaced by the clashes 2 days ago face challenges.
So children and women and old men, they were running out. And most of them, they were suffering in the bush. So this is the condition now. All everything has been closed. And the traders also, they ran out. In the town, the food, it is very difficult to get it. So people were suffering outside.
Fighting broke out on Monday between armed young men and the South Sudan's People's Defense Forces, or SSPDF, leaving at least 13 people dead, including a former SSPDF area commander in Poshala, Colonel Joseph Okunj, who was gunned down by his colleague. Olung says a majority of displaced civilians will go without shelter after government forces allegedly use helicopter gunships to bomb villages.
It's the government of Juba who are picking the gunship to become and to bombing the youth. The gunship was killed three people, and the wounded is two. It is the army youth.
Lul Raikong, a spokesperson for the South Sudan's People's Defense Forces, says the government used helicopters after armed young men allegedly overwhelmed SSPDF in Poshala.
The armed civilians attacked our defensive position in large numbers and they breached part of the defensive positions, and therefore we had to call for air support so that they are driven back. Since your base is on the verge of being overrun by hostile elements, what do? You allow yourself to be slaughtered, or you have to fight back and save your life?
Abraham Kelang, the information minister in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, confirms the humanitarian situation remains challenging in Poshala.
General situation is really worse because any place conflict happens, they are destroying a lot of things. Currently, humanitarian staff is out of headquarters, Poshala.
Ben Dose Maloa, Chief of Public Information at the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says the United Nations are aware about the situation in Poshala.
The mission is working with authorities on the ground to de-escalate tensions and restore calm. UNMISS urges the government and youth to exercise restraint and focus on dialogue-based solutions to resolve this issue, and for youth to respect the government's call for a ceasefire. UNMISS also calls on uniformed actors to uphold their duty to protect all civilians during their operations.
Under Resolution 2677-2023, the Security Council determined that the situation in South Sudan continues to constitute a threat to international peace and security in the region. The Council extended the UNMISS mandate until 15th of March 2024. Under Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, UNMISS is to use all necessary means to implement its mandate, which includes the protection of civilians, among others. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor in Juba.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, September 21st, 2023. We now leave you with the Congolese music star Fally Ipupa and the song Stop à la Guerre.
Stop à la guerre, stop à la guerre, stop à la guerre. Stop à la guerre, stop à la guerre.
Tengaye, tengaye.
Been listening to Fally Ipupa and the song Stop à la Guerre. Don't forget to visit voafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to voafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Peter Hanley, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.